America and to all of our listeners all over the world. You are listening to a post-Thanksgiving food coma edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Sologies, Teresa Sammons, and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi to the good people, guys.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah. So, yeah, if I sound a little, I don't know, off or, you know, just a little out of it, it's because it's been a long fucking week for just about all of us, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously, Thanksgiving is a kind of stressful, like, week-long preparation for basically everybody. But it especially is for me because I work at a grocery store. So, yeah, but we'll be getting to all that. So, yeah, like we said, Thanksgiving was this week. We all ate well, hopefully. But among some other things that happened.
Well.
Yeah. But among other things that happened this week that we will be discussing, crypto is basically once again shown to be a bunch of bullshit. There's a bunch of stuff about negotiating a global plastics treaty, because that's something we definitely need. The guy who killed George Floyd, it got stabbed while he was in prison. I mean, apparently he's still alive, but
50 points.
Yeah. We lost one of the great first ladies this week as well. The Voting Rights Amendment is in danger once again. Elon Musk did another Musk. That's what I'm going to call it now. He did a Musk because
yeah,
that's just, and this one is basically 100% self-inflicted.
yeah.
OpenAI just let go of their CEO. We'll tell you why. It was short-lived. I'll just let you that. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment and movie-related stuff as well. But before we get to all of that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend, we'll start off, as we always do, as is tradition, with all the shit we've been doing this week, which, of course, includes Thanksgiving and eating our fill and tolerating extended family. And is also tradition, we're starting with Chris. So, Chris, what are you doing this week? Well, what were you doing this week?
Yeah, spent Thanksgiving at my parents, hanging out, doing that, having some food and all that, that I got a bunch to take back. So,
yeah,
that's been fun. But yeah, we got cold now. It's in the 30s right now.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you can tell it.
Oh, God, yes.
for that. So, yeah, that's the fun thing. For what I've been doing, finished up Loki season 2 on Disney Plus, and they did a good job with it. Wraps up pretty neat with Loki doing some cool stuff. Kind of playing around with what his abilities are and all the stuff that's been going on in the way he's got people trying to find ways, them bringing back like Tony Stark and whatever, and I don't care about that at all, but
yeah.
that's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've been watching is Squid Game, The Challenge, the sort of yeah. reality competition show that Netflix is, or did.
Mm-hmm.
That basically runs people through a number of the games. So far, the ones I've seen, 2 episodes, they've run them through 2 of the games from the show. As well as having like tests between games as like means of potentially eliminating other people and whatnot, sowing discord amongst the groups that start forming in a fun way. And yeah, they get a lot of the same kind of stuff, except, you know, nobody dies. They have like an ink pack in their under their like collar of their shirt that explodes.
Yeah,
pops up like a thing, and a lot of the people, you know, do the right thing and play up like they just got shot.
Yeah,
and just fall over and collapse. Other people just like slowly sit down and just lay down.
Yeah,
especially some of the older folks.
Yeah,
but yeah. The red light, green light thing had some interesting strategies people had of like, What if you just like dive on the ground when they're about to hit, say, you know, red light, kind of thing, and look around as like a means of not moving? Then it's like, how do you know what's going on if you're not looking? That kind of stuff. And then you dig into like pre-show interviews of certain people, just like getting backstories and such of people that you're like, are these going to be key people over the course of the show? Or are they just going to be like slightly interesting stories, and some of them just like get eliminated immediately, and others sort of deal with all that? So yeah, they do some stuff where, you know, if this was actual risking death, these people would not have done some of these things. yeah, there's people who just intentionally like get themselves eliminated.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. However they play up the game part of it, but yeah, it's pretty neat for that. So,
didn't one of or two of them complain about getting frostbite?
Yeah, apparently some people on that show got injured, and there's like they're suing Netflix, which is just that's like coming full circle, isn't it?
Yeah. I would imagine they sign pretty extensive liability things, being like, you're responsible for injuries and whatnot here.
Yeah.
So I don't know what legs they have to stand on, but I'm not getting anything where there might be frostbite. So, but there's like weird stuff where they like hand out the meals tins.
Yeah.
And like one guy is like sneaking multiple and then like hanging out on other people being like, getting them to like give him a little more of like, oh, you're going to finish that? Like finishing off people's stuff. And that's where certain people are like, oh, that guy's an asshole. That kind of stuff. So yeah, it's got some fun elements to it. And the other thing I've been watching is more Yu Yu Hakusho, where I'm in the semifinals, I guess, where they move to the next arena.
Yep, because that's what eventually happens with all Shonen Jump franchises. There's always a tournament arc.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they're the highlight of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yusuke has gone through his fun little extra training that nearly kills him, that he's unwilling to not do it. So... But it's like a good bit where Kuwabara keeps getting sent through a dimensional portal that lands him in the old arena. That's kind of like one of those, I'm too stupid to give up. I'm just going to keep fighting my way back in. So, yeah, that's still been fun. But for games, I've been playing a bunch of Dredge. I got a code for the DLC on a platform I didn't have it on, so I ended up just buying it since it's on sale during Black Friday. This game's still really good. For those that don't know what it is, it's like a spooky fishing game where you're controlling a dredge boat that is going around these islands where Cthulhu shit is happening.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah, Cthulhu shit's happening.
The one of the main mechanics is that time passes as you're moving your boat or fishing, that kind of stuff. And if you're out past dark, which is at 6 p.m., the like compass meter is turns into an eye and starts like flickering and looking around and all that as it's signaling like weird shit's gonna happen if you stay out longer, which I did end up doing that one time and finding out it just kind of puts a bunch of fake rocks out in the water, that kind of stuff, playing around with your perception. Luckily I'd been to know like, oh, those aren't real, but I'm going to avoid them anyway. I know where I'm going to go anyway. So, but yeah, the DLC adds like a new island off to the south of all the other ones, do some stuff and build up my ship enough to, be worth going down there. And I think that's supposed to be like an icy area. So looking forward to that. But just been doing a bunch of the other stuff in the game for now. And that's been good. And the other game I've been playing a bunch of is Backpack Hero. I continue to play it on Steam. This is a game that is basically a roguelite RPG, but with the main mechanic of Resident Evil 4's inventory system,
mm-hmm.
Where you are putting your weapons and armor and other stuff that you're getting in these dungeons in your backpack and arranging them to try to fit everything that's important to you. And that stuff can boost stats of other things depending on how you lay it out. All that kind of stuff. And yeah, you're trying to, you know, complete these runs. They're usually pretty quick, 10 to 15 minutes at most. But you're getting like quests that to do certain things, bring back certain items, get a lot of requirements for unlocking more stuff that'll require certain things. So you're kind of doing these runs with an eye on like, I need to see if I can get this kind of item or this specific thing to drop that makes the whole game kind of fun to do repetitive runs and such as you. Because especially some of the quests just give you unique things to start with your loadout.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than some of the basic items that you and that stuff kind of puts little wrinkles in the game, especially different kinds of loadouts you can go for. Like there's, you get your basic sword type weapons and shields and that kind of stuff, but you can really start investing heavily into like bows and arrows and such, and that's a whole weird kind of way that that's set up. And like magic is in there as well, and that's requires specific kinds of items and way that stuff is set up. So yeah, you're kind of it's got a lot of flexibility to it, so that's been just fun to jump into here and there. So that's been pretty much it for me. So Teresa, what have you been doing?
Shivering because it's cold.
Same.
I got up this morning and flicked on the heat because it was like, I don't know, 25. And it wasn't bad in here. It was 71, but it was a chilly 71. Well, no, it was 68 when I got up. It went up to 71 after all the dust burned off on the furnace. So at least that part's done, right? Everybody hates that at the beginning of the year if they have central heat. It stinks. I've been watching a decent amount of stuff, just like keeping up with Rick and Morty, and last week's episode was it a week before? I don't know. It was great. I think it's episode 4 of the season. Best one so far. We've been watching some movies. We've been watching some of the Scooby-Doo movies that have come out in like the past, 15 years or so, animated.
Yeah, the animated like straight video ones.
Yeah. And, you know, they all have an okay amount of story to them.
Yeah. All of them are actually pretty good. What were you going to say?
Oh, my favorite one was the one set in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mine is, I'm trying to remember which one it was. I think it's Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah, you might have. You'll know it. You'll remember it because it's the one with the Hex Girls in it. Trust me. When you encounter them, you will remember them. Yeah.
We also rewatched Shaun of the Dead. I mean, you know.
That's a classic.
And it made me want to go back and, like, everybody in it was a who's who of, you know, British, modern British comedy, whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a who's who of BBC, people from space. Yeah. Doctor Who people, IT crowd people, they're all representing.
You know what I genuinely love about that movie is it's probably the most realistic zombie apocalypse movie of all of them.
You know, yeah.
Because, like, the whole thing only lasts, like, 24 hours before the military comes out and figures out what to do.
Yeah.
And then they just sort of, like, and because it's so very British, because they just go back to usual afterward with just the reality that, oh, yeah, zombies are a thing now. They even come up with, like, a politically correct term for them. They're not zombies, they're the living mobile. They're the mobile deceased.
He's mobile.
That yeah. was close.
Yeah.
It's always a good time watching that one.
Oh, yeah.
But for gaming, I bought Boomerang Foo like 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And we finally tried it out. And yeah, that's pretty fun. We've only just scratched the surface of it. So yeah, I can understand how it completely decimates friendships. It could. And other than that, I've been playing some of the new tracks in the most recent DLC for Mario Kart 8. I'm kind of enjoying that, but I haven't done many unlocks or anything. I probably need to run about 2 or 3 times or something and see what I find. But that's kind of it for me. Pat, what have you been up to?
All right, yeah, Pat, what about you?
So the big thing for me is that, well, the import games keep rolling in because I've got a really good source in Japan now who apparently mm-hmm. is willing to make trips out to places like Hard Off or Surugaya to pick up specific games on request. So that's been huge. Right. I also did my first full form game hunting import game shopping video
mm-hmm.
Where I go through 5 eBay stores trying to show people similar shopping experiences that a lot of YouTubers are doing, like at actual brick and mortar stores in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had quite a good degree of success. This last haul was spectacular. And so, yeah, I'm just continuing on with that. And on the one hand, it was a real bitch to edit the nigh on hour and a half shopping video when I'm used to just doing 5 to 12 minute stuff. But I think it turned out really well, and I'm excited to do this again and maybe just start reviewing stores based on prices, based on communication, organization, things like that. And so in a move I am sure I will eventually regret, I did solicit requests for stores that people want me to check out while I'm out shopping for import games, because I'm planning on making this a regular thing, at least shopping for them, not necessarily, I wasn't necessarily planning on making huge productions out of it, but this one video turned out really well, and so we'll see what happens. And I've already got one store in mind for my next video if I end up going that route, because they've got a really interesting shipping structure that will probably lead to me placing massive orders with them.
Cool.
So, yeah, I've put the link in the show notes. If anyone wants to watch me shop for import games for over an hour, then, and just see what both good, amazing, and bad, amazing finds I get, because there were some prices that were really out there. But it was fun, and I ended up buying quite a few games from it for both the PC Engine and the Super Famicom, because that's what I was shopping for. And I'm not going to spoil too much, but I almost got lured over into the Sega Saturn and PlayStation 2 direction while I was at it. So, you know, I did sell off most of my retro stuff, but my import stuff is still with me, and all my hardware is still with me, so... There are a lot of places I can go with this. So I don't know if any of you have seen the shopping video yet, but if and when you do, let me know what you think of it, and if you have any ideas for things I should look at, you know, for future videos, because I had a lot of fun making this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, then it's my turn then. First and foremost, I am still playing Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, and I beat the King Knight stuff. That game is, obviously, like I said, like all the Shovel Knight games, both incredibly fun and also incredibly difficult. But what's funny about the King Knight one is that it literally ends right at the point where Shovel Knight actually encounters King Knight in the original game. So basically what happens is, King Knight, the whole thing he's been doing this whole game is he's been trying to when the joust is crowned, because in this particular game, one of the big parts of the game is this is like this card game mechanic, playing this game called Joustice, and he apparently finds out that if he fights and defeats or battles or plays against the three major judges of the Joustice tournament, he will apparently be given the Joustice crown. And he, in his mind, thinks, if I can do that, that means I can become king. Well, he eventually finds out that that's not how it works. And so instead, in a fit of rage, he decides to go up against the final boss. I'm not going to spoil that, but it basically ends with him ordering all of the Joustice cards in his kingdom to be taken, to be confiscated, and then burned. But yeah, that game is still good. I've got three down. I need to do the Specter Knight one, and that will be the end of that. But Specter Knight one is particularly difficult because he has this particular mechanic where he has one where he like runs up walls, which isn't necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. The problem is that it's kind of not entirely consistent, like how far up the wall he can run before he has to leap off. And the other issue is that he has that thing, that like ninja type thing where, oh, there's like a enemy or a target like out in the middle of thin air, and you can just like shoo and teleport and ching like through it, and then use it as like a secondary jump. But the problem is that depending on the direction you're going in and the like where your height in correlation with the target, it'll either have you going like slashing upward or slashing downward, which when you're trying to, you know, go across a particular area, that can be an issue, as you can probably expect. So I've been playing that. And the other thing I've been playing, I have been watching The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix. And oh my God, it is so good. It is so, so good. Did you guys ever read the original short story when like you were taking like high school English?
No.
No, but my mom was all about it.
Okay, so here's the sort of reminder of like what the essential story is. In the original story, there's the unnamed narrator. He gets a letter from a guy named Roderick Usher, who's a friend of his. Roderick Usher and his sister, Madeline Usher, are the only remaining members of this old aristocratic house called the Ushers. And they live in a manor that's like out in the middle of like a gross sort of rotting swamp where all the trees are decayed and dying and all that. When he gets there, he finds out that, you know, Roderick himself is essentially dealing with some, obviously he's having like some mental issues. He's convinced that the house is alive, and his sister Madeline is basically bedridden and she keeps going into like these catatonic trances. But basically what happens is while they're there, and he's like, you know, the narrator's hanging out with Roderick Usher, and Roderick's there, he's like, we're gonna, you know, we'll like read poetry, we'll like read some books, and I'll show you this thing I've been doing on my guitar that I'll show you. The house keeps getting like being faced with these earthquakes because, you know, it's in the middle of a swamp. And eventually they hear Madeline screaming from her bedroom, and they go there, and Roderick thinks she's died, so they go to bury her in the crypt. And then as the night goes on, they start hearing this banging and screaming noise from what they think is a crypt. They go there. Madeline breaks out and strangles Roderick to death, and the narrator flees. And as he's leaving, the house itself collapses in on itself and then sinks into the swamp. And that's that's the story of The Fall of the House of Usher. Well, what they did here for the Netflix series is they took the concept of The Fall of the House of Usher and they sort of brought it into modern times. So in the original story, the Ushers are like this aristocratic family who are believed to have like gotten their power by essentially through incredibly corrupt, amoral means. And because of that, they became a wealthy aristocratic family. In the Netflix version of the Fall of the House of Usher, the Ushers became wealthy through what would be considered the most corrupt of modern means, by running and owning a major pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
Called Fortunato Pharmaceutical.
I figured it was that or crypto.
Yeah. And anyway, so what happens is the show basically opens with a funeral. Roderick Usher, who's like the patriarch of the Usher family, and his sister Madeline are at this funeral for three of their children. And while he's there, he looks behind and he hallucinates what looks like a woman wearing a bird mask from the balcony near the end of the cathedral. And as this is happening, his granddaughter, Lenore, who's, I'll get to that, but Lenore is like, "Grandpa, what's wrong?" And he says, "She's here." And then we have a point where then we go back to another character, C. August Dupont, Dupin is his name. And he was originally like a Medicare insurance fraud investigator who eventually ended up becoming state's attorney. And he is responsible for doing this huge class action lawsuit against the Fortunato Pharmaceuticals and the Usher family, because the Usher family put out it's called Ligadome, but it's Oxycontin. Like it's not even subtle. The Ushers are basically the same family. while that's happening, while he's like preparing his case and everything, because you know they're getting ready, because the case is already as that's going on. He gets a call from Roderick Usher himself, who takes him to this old, grody, like rundown neighborhood that's like all the houses are abandoned, everything's boarded up and everything. And he goes to this old, rotted, looks like a old kind of, not really a manor, but it's like an old sort of 18th century house where Roderick is sitting. And Roderick basically says, "Here's what you've been wanting to get from me. Here it comes. My confession." And he basically gives the whole story. And basically the whole sort of series is him. The frame device is him giving this confession to August Dupont. And what it reveals is basically you get to meet all of the other Ushers. And the thing you need to know is that with the exception of Lenore, the granddaughter, every single one of the Ushers are terrible people. All of them. They're hedonistic, greedy, amoral. They use and abuse people and toss them aside when they no longer need them. Roderick himself, all of his children, he's had six children from five different women. and like every single one of them are just awful, awful people in their own ways. And they're all like involved in various businesses. There's Perry, who runs like a series of nightclubs. There's his other daughter, Victorine, who runs what they call Roderick Usher Enterprises, which is like a medical testing lab. They call it the Rue Morgue because they kill so many, testing animals trying to get these products done. Frederick, who is like this, I forgot what it is he does. There's also his other daughter is like getting ready to start a startup company called Goldbug. That's like a Peloton type thing. Every single one of them, awful, awful people, all of them. And basically the whole series is every single dying in horrible ways. It's basically like Final Destination meets Succession. and the thing is, there's another thing, is Roderick has a condition. I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's like, I think it's something like, it's called vascular dementia. There's a particular, like, really super medical name for it, which, considering I'm trained as a medical coder, I should freaking remember it, but I don't. But basically, everyone in the family, it's a degenerative disorder. And Roderick arguably has it the most advanced. The problem is pretty much everybody else in the family also has it, but just in various ways. And all of them start like hallucinating really weird shit. And what the reason that during the during like a pre-trial hearing that they're having, when all the ushers are in court and they're all still alive, August Dupin lets slip that he has gotten a bunch of new information because one of the members in the one of the members of the Usher family has decided to become state's informant, and because of that, they've basically all turned on each other. And Roderick, being Roderick, basically puts a bounty on the head of anyone who can find out who the informant is, $50 million straight cash. But then what basically happens is every successive episode in the show is essentially a spent takeoff or an adaptation of one of Poe's other stories. So there's the third episode is like The Mask of the Red Death. I think it's either the fourth or the fifth episode is The Black Cat. The sixth one is the Telltale Heart. The last one is straight up, well, technically the first and the last one are straight up references to The Raven. But yeah, it is very good. Oh yeah, and I forgot to mention, the Usher, their attorney slash fixer is a guy named Arthur Pym. He's played by Mark Hamill, and Mark Hamill absolutely nails it. Yeah, it's an amazing series. Absolutely watch it. It's amazing. It's only 8 episodes. It's completely self-contained. Just watch it. It's amazing. Really, other than that, I'm just dealing with the after effects of Thanksgiving. Like I said, Thanksgiving is, for at least for us Americans, it's a week-long affair of preparation, and then Thanksgiving happens, and then we're just working off the after effects afterwards.
While dealing with Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, basically. Especially if you're like me and you work at a grocery store. The week of Thanksgiving is incredibly hectic. Constantly trying to get... I remember back when I was working at Walmart where like it would, and it didn't quite get bad. But I remembered when I was working at Walmart, the one time I was there for Thanksgiving, and they basically, so many people were trying to get turkeys that there were none in the like actual poultry aisle. So like they had workers literally just taking them off the truck and then going through the back of the store and handing them out to customers. It didn't get that bad, but I still had to deal with turkey after turkey after turkey. And I don't know if you guys have ever handled a frozen turkey before.
Oh, yeah.
Those things are heavy as shit. And I don't know, those like plastic Kroger bags, they don't really, they're not very strong. So I basically had to like triple bag every single one of those bad boys. And let's just say my shoulder was kind of, I had some kinks in my shoulder. By the end of that week. And then of course there was just a constant customer flow. Trying to keep that store stocked during Thanksgiving and trying to like keep, you know, make sure that there are like plenty of shopping carts available for customers to get is in and of itself extremely daunting. I will tell you though, there is a weird bit of altruism with a bunch of our customers because some of them will just leave their carts near where you get them in the store. So I don't necessarily have to go out into the parking lot and bring them back in, you know, four or five or six or seven at a time. But then you have those crazy ass people who, for some reason, you know, even I am the main entryway is closed, but the other entryway is open. For some reason, they park all the way to the other side of the damn part of the parking lot, and then they take their cart all the way to the other side of the parking lot and put it into the little slot there. And it's like, why? Why go through all of that? But yeah, so yeah, that was my week. So you guys want to add anything before we move on?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, then. Well, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And because it's, you know, Thanksgiving and I have this, you know, just this this food on the mind, you know, which, let me tell you, working at a grocery store for a lot, you build up an appetite after a while. Had me thinking about food. And a couple shows ago, I talked about one of the ritziest dishes you can get, which is pressed duck, you know, which happened to also be like one of the main dishes at the dinner of the three emperors, which is also something I talked about a while back. Basically, it was this incredibly ritzy banquet, arguably the most expensive meal in history, that was basically put together in honor Tsar Alexander II, his son Alexander, who would eventually become Alexander III, the Emperor of Prussia, King William I, who was accompanied by the Prince Otto von Bismarck. So, you know, the three emperors' dinner. And it, like I said, pressed duck was one of the extremely ritzy things that they had to eat there. There was another one, though, that they ate there that I wanted to talk about briefly this week, simply because it's not a very complicated dish. Like, pressed duck is actually a complicated dish because it requires specialty training with cooking technique. It requires specialty equipment to prepare. This one doesn't necessarily require anything particularly special or necessarily expensive, but because what it's made of and how it's served and how it's consumed, it's become like the epitome of like culinary decadence. Like, this is up there with, like, you know, shark fin soup or, you know, something like that, that is like incredibly environmentally destructive for what's ultimately not a lot of payoff in the end. So it's called ortolans. Do you guys know what an ortolan is?
No.
An ortolan is a bird. It's a little bunting bird. It's kind of like they're very tiny. They're sort of like they're very spastic little birds. It's in the passerine family, sort of related to finches. And it's like, okay, what's the big deal? Okay, so they're basically part of the thing you need to know about ortolans is they typically put their nest near the ground instead of like high up in like a tree. And that's going to be important. I'm going to tell you why in a bit. They usually eat seeds as part of their natural diet, but they'll also regularly eat beetles if they want to, or other insects when they're feeding their young. And that's all well and good. So like all birds, like most birds, I should say, not all birds, but most birds, they tend to migrate during autumn and into winter, you know, fly south for the winter, as a lot of birds do. During this time, there are specialized, shall we call them hunters, who catch them in nets, and then keep them in covered cages or boxes. While they are there, they are supplied with an enormous amount of grain or millet seed because they're basically in the dark and they're essentially, they're in there because their natural instincts are like, oh, it's dark. That must mean it's winter. So I must, you know, begin eating to prepare myself for the winter ahead. And they basically gorge themselves on this grain until they're about double their usual size. After that, when it's time to prepare the dish, the bird is taken out from the cage whole and is then taken over to a pot, which is usually filmed with Armagnac, which is a distinctive type of brandy, where they are then drowned by hand. I'm just going to let that settle in just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after that happens, it both drowns, but also the bird is then, plucked. It's then roasted for 8 minutes. Well, actually, I got that backwards. It's first roasted, then plucked.
That sounds messy.
Yeah, the bird is then, the sauce or whatever that's formed from the Armagnac. It's usually served on a piece of toast. It doesn't have to be, but it's usually placed on a piece of toast. After that, in order to consume the bird, the consumer then places the bird feet first into their mouth while holding onto the bird's head. The ortolan is then eaten whole, with or without the head, and the consumer spits out the larger bones.
No.
And it gets freakier. There's this long tradition where, in order to eat this properly, you have to place a large towel or napkin over your head while consuming the bird. And there's two reasons for this. One is so that you can retain the maximum aroma flavor as they consume the entire bird at once. The other one is that because, quote, it's so decadent that you use the towel to hide your sin from God.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Him too.
Yeah. Supposedly the use of the towel was because a priest who was a friend of Jean-Antoine-Marie Savarin, who is like one of the original French gastronomes. Like I said, this particular piece was eaten at the Three Emperors Dinner in 1867, which was included among 16 other courses. It was also a favorite dish of Antonio Egas-Moniz, one of the inventors of the lobotomy procedure. I don't know why that seems so appropriate, but it is.
Yeah, I was about to call that a non sequitur, and then I stopped.
Uh-huh. Former French president François Mitterrand had his last New Year's Eve meal, which included this specially prepared bird. And last but not least, because it's like a cycle of just the decadent and the worst. Bill Cosby described eating it at an Italian restaurant on his 1973 album, Fat Albert. Yeah.
This all tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. According to the Wine Spectator, quote, for centuries, a rite of passage for French gourmets was the eating of the ortolan. These tiny birds, captured alive, force-fed, then drowned in Armagnac brandy, were roasted whole and then eaten that way, bones and all, while the diner draped his head with a linen napkin to preserve the precious aromas and, some believe, to hide their sin from God. But in 1999, ortolan hunting was actually banned in France, but the law was poorly enforced, and it's thought that up to 50,000 ortolans were illegally killed each year during the autumn migration, most of them from breeding grounds in Finland and the Baltic areas. According to France's League for the Protection of Birds, France's ortolan population fell 30% between 1997 and 2007. In 2007, the French government vowed to strictly enforce some existing rules about banning the practice, with the maximum fine set at 6,000 euros, which is about 4,800 pounds, or $6,728. Killing and cooking ortolans is banned across the European Union. In 2007, France's League for Protection of Birds and from the European Union resulted in the French government promising to enforce the EU directive. After several years of active citizen watch revealing little, if any, change in the field situation, the local representative of the government repeated this statement in 2016. European Union member states prohibit, and here we go, deliberate killing or capture of ortolans by any method, deliberate destruction or damage to their nests and eggs, or removal of said nests, taking their eggs in the wild and keeping these eggs, deliberate disturbance of these birds, particularly during the period of breeding and rearing, insofar as it would have a significant negative effect on the birds, keeping the birds, the hunting and capture of which is prohibited, and sale, transport for sale, keeping for sale, and the offer and of any recognizable parts or derivatives of the ortolan. As of 2018, the ortolan's bunting's population is listed by the IUCN as least concern. So, fortunately, there is still an issue, but it is. But yeah, that was ortolans. That is one of the most infamously decadent haute cuisine that exists, and fortunately, it's long since disappearing. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Rant Toy.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start with Assholes of the Week. And our first Assholes of the Week is CZ, founder of the crypto giant Binance, who pled guilty to money laundering violations. That's the least of it, but yeah.
Yeah. This is Xiangpeng Zhao, who agreed to plead guilty to money laundering violations and to step down from the world's largest crypto exchange as part of a sweeping settlement with U.S. law enforcement and financial regulators. He's going to also pay a $50 million fine, while Binance will pay $4.3 billion in fines as part of the deal, which will allow Binance to continue operating. Yeah, this comes from the Department of Justice, Treasury Department, and Commodity Future Trading Commission. Less than a month after federal prosecutors convinced a jury to find ZZ's one-time rival FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried guilty of 7 criminal charges. So yeah, kind of going at these different sort of corrupt crypto figures here.
Yep.
And yeah, the deal ends investigations by the DOJ and the commodities regulator into Binance. They may still face more penalties from the SEC. And yeah, let's see. It's just another one of these groups that's been doing a lot of shady shit, kind of finally having to pay for that. And some huge fines here. So good to see.
Yeah, good. Once again, crypto is bullshit.
yeah.
But now for something that's a bit infuriating. So there was about 150 countries that met to negotiate a plastics treaty, because as probably as everybody's figured out by now, there's a bunch of plastic in the ocean and a bunch of other places, and it's a problem. It's causing a direct problem. And it basically ended with little progress. Countries just block everybody else.
Yeah, so they had this at in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
They had this whole meeting here. Members of the United Nations wanted to finalize a treaty by the end of 2024 to reduce the vast amount of plastic waste that piles up in landfills and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic production expected to soar in the coming years, and almost every piece of it is made from chemicals derived from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they had representatives from about 150 countries met for talks last week in Nairobi.
Mm.
Most of them worked to find commonalities among diverse global perspectives, but the entire process was continually delayed by a small number of member states prioritizing plastic and profit before the planet.
Mm-hmm.
As Aaron Simon, the head of plastic waste and business at the World Wildlife Fund, said mm-hmm. in a statement, which, yeah. Makes a lot of sense that there are countries that would be more interested in that than doing anything like that. Groups that want to see deep cuts in plastic waste worry plastic producers will weaken the treaty. The oil and gas industry is pushing recycling and waste management as solutions rather than reducing how much new plastic gets made in the first place. Because, if you don't really know, plastic comes from a lot of like oil kind of sources, as well as a lot of clothing too.
Oh yeah.
So as much as, you know, the focus on that stuff is on fuel mm-hmm. production, there's a lot of other stuff that gets dealt with. The challenge is coming up with a plan that's effective in cutting plastic waste that also gets buy-in from all the countries involved. Mm-hmm. Big oil and gas producers like China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia at the negotiating table.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S., which was the world's top oil and gas producer in 2022, has said plastic pollution needs to be dealt with mm-hmm. at every stage of the plastic life cycle.
Yeah.
From production to waste management. And so, yeah, they had a, let's see, the Center for International Environmental Law said 143 lobbyists from the fossil fuel and chemical industries registered for the largest round of negotiation, which is a big deal. They just seem to be trying to fuck with things in a way that's not great. And, you know, we can't trust these companies individually to do anything on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to focus on profits more than, you know, saving the world.
Yep.
So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. As you were probably also expecting this coming up behind it, the UN Environmental Program reported that we're devastated warming as the world has fallen behind on its promises.
Yep.
What a shock.
Yeah. The numbers are sobering and arriving less than 2 weeks before the world leaders are set to gather in Dubai for the annual UN climate negotiations. Between 2021 and 2022, global greenhouse gas emissions grew about 1%. Emissions need to fall as quickly as possible to avoid catastrophic climate impacts, such as runaway sea level rise, unsurvivable heat in some areas, and mass extinction of plants and animals. Right now, the world is headed for 4.5 degrees Fahrenheit of warming this century compared to global temperatures in the late 1800s. That assumes countries will do everything they have currently promised under the Paris Climate Agreement, including things that some governments have said they'll only do if wealthy countries follow through on promises to help foot the bill. For example, helping to pay for renewable energy infrastructure in less wealthy nations. If such conditions aren't met, the planet is headed for more than 5 degrees of Fahrenheit warming, which is not good at all. Basically, it comes to the conclusion that we need radical change as soon as possible. None of this making slight changes, that kind of stuff. We need to cut the use of fossil fuels as fuel for cars and all that, you know, as quickly as possible. And move over to, you know, electric vehicles, public transportation, all that kind of stuff ASAP. Yeah, as they say here, even the lower end of the current projected temperature range, 4.5 degrees Fahrenheit of warming, is catastrophically high. Under the Paris Agreement, the nations are trying to limit warming to no more than 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, ideally closer to 2.7 degrees. The new analysis finds that in order to meet those targets, global greenhouse gas emissions would need to fall at least 28% more than they're currently on track to. And the lower target is likely out of reach entirely at this point. So, yeah. That means all new oil, gas, and coal extraction is essentially incompatible with avoiding catastrophic warming later this century. Right now, many countries, including the United States, are still allowing new fossil fuel extraction.
Yep.
So, yeah. Essentially, capitalism is destroying the world.
Yeah.
Fast.
Yep. And last but not least, Derek Chauvin got shanked while he was in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why he's in, like, a general population prison, I don't know why.
Oh, I love it.
But, yeah, he got seriously injured on Friday after another inmate stabbed him inside a federal prison in Arizona.
These are the types of people that should be in general.
Yeah. But, yeah, he remains in stable condition. So, there you go.
Yeah. But now we've also got to go from the other side of that to nicer, I guess, our heroes of the week. And this week, both Israel and Hamas were able to agree to a temporary ceasefire that started on Friday, that's yesterday, to exchange hostages. But that's good, but the flip side of that is that apparently there's been a couple of instances where the ceasefire has been broken.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's any sort of mass thing, like, but there has been reports of firings going. But yeah, let's see here. They are exchanging prisoners, sort of in groups of sorts. So, yeah, 13 Israeli hostages were expected to be handed over by 4 p.m. on Friday. And then I think Israel is supposed to be handing over what they call prisoners, but these are people that are generally not charged with anything. They're just held because of them being Palestinians. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people, especially children,
yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah, they're swapping about 50 Israeli and I forget, they're like Thai and some other nationality hostages that Hamas has had. But about 150 Palestinians are going to be freed over the 4-day period. They potentially may extend this further to release more people on both sides, potentially up to 10 days, as well as allowing humanitarian aid trucks to enter Gaza each day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had Egypt and Qatar were part of the negotiations here to help broker some sort of peace agreement here.
Mm-hmm.
So that is good news.
Yeah. So, yeah, both Israeli hostages have been exchanged. We will see where this goes going forward. But, yeah. So, with that out of the way, it's now time to move on to the proper show. And sadly, we got the news this week that First Lady Rosalynn Carter passed away. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad.
She's not somebody we have much knowledge of.
Yeah.
I don't think she's a first lady that's been talked about much. Mm. But she is a very important one, considered, mm-hmm. you know, a very vital part of Jimmy Carter's sort of cabinet.
Yep.
She was called, I'm not sure if they have her nickname here, the Steel Magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
By the press during her years in the White House for the toughness she exhibited. Behind the gentle persona she outwardly embraced.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout Jimmy Carter's time in public office, she was her husband's closest political advisor.
Mm-hmm.
She also revolutionized and professionalized the First Lady role by expanding the office mm-hmm. beyond hostess duties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was frequently somebody that went on, you know, diplomatic trips and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Spent a lot of time, you know, trying to be more of a central figure of her husband's administration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In ways that not many before her did that.
Nope.
But yeah, she managed to get to 96. Her husband, who is 99, Jimmy Carter, has been in hospice care for most of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And now, moving on to something that quite as sad, but still very sad. Federal Appeals Court has struck down a key part of the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah. This is the, let's see, the Eighth Circuit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what states comprise the Eighth Circuit?
This is in Arkansas. It's a new ruling in an Arkansas redistricting lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
That is a... Yeah, the legal dispute is focused on who is allowed to sue to try to enforce key provisions under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
Private individuals and groups who do not represent the U.S. government have for decades brought the majority of Section 2 cases to court. Mm-hmm. I think something like 90%+ of cases. Those cases have challenged the redrawing of voting maps and other steps in the elections process with claims that the voting power of the people of color have been minimized. Mm. But yeah, the U.S. District Judge Lee Rudofsky, an appointee of Trump, mm-hmm. however, said that only the head of the Justice Department, the U.S. Attorney General, can bring Section 2 lawsuits and dismissed an Arkansas redistricting case brought by advocacy groups representing black voters in the state. And on Monday, the lower court ruling was upheld in a 2-1 vote by a 3-judge panel of the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, whose rulings apply to Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. So, yeah, this is likely to go to the Supreme Court, and we'll see where that goes, because they have cut down certain parts of the Voting Rights Act as being unconstitutional, but have generally held up most of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unclear where that might go, but, yeah, this would... a huge deal to bar private groups and attorneys from bringing up these kind of issues. So we'll see how this goes whenever it inevitably gets picked up by Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next up, South Korea's government announced that they believe that North Korea has put a spy satellite into orbit in its third attempt.
Yeah, it's a wild thing. Nobody, I don't know if anybody has gotten official confirmation of this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, South Korea is certainly doing a lot of work to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Fallout of whatever it's going on. But yeah, the North Space Agency said that its crew, or its new Kolyma 1 carrier rocket, accurately placed the Malyong 1 satellite into orbit on Tuesday night. So that's certainly something that could be interesting. I don't know. I'll have to see if they are telling the truth or not.
Mm. We'll see. We will see. And now for another example of doing a Musk. X is being sued, is not being sued, but is suing Media Matter over the report it released on ads next to an anti-Semitic post. And so the story behind here is Media Matters put out a article that showed all these numerous examples of like major advertisers having their ads appearing next to nakedly anti-Semitic and like racist neo-Nazi posts from various individuals, which has caused a bunch of X's major advertisers to pull out for the time being. And so Elon has decided that Media Matters must pay, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think this is going to go anywhere. But yeah, Elon's attempt to once again sort of go after groups that are trying to call out these kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, X's complaint claims that Media Matters manipulated algorithms on the platform to create images of advertisers' paid posts next to racist incendiary content. The juxtapositions, according to the complaint, were manufactured, inorganic, and extraordinarily rare.
Mm.
Which extraordinarily rare means it still happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way you want to frame it. And I believe the CEO of X has posted something similar of sorts, saying like, you know, the numbers of people that saw these ads next to these kinds of posts were, you know, rare, but it's like, you're not saying it didn't happen. But yeah, this is a weird thing. So yeah, that's a whole wild thing. And in case you're wondering, Elon Musk just a little bit ago posted a thing from some AI assistant called Grok.
Yeah.
About
which is apparently his project, I believe.
Yeah. Dealing with the trolley problem.
Yeah.
In this case, the dilemma is whether to use a racial slur to save a billion lives or to avoid using the slur and let the trolley continue on its course, resulting in the death of a billion people.
What the goddamn fuck?
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where it's like they have to come up with these really stupid, outlandish scenarios in their heads to justify behavior.
Yeah. And it says, in this situation, I would choose to use the racial slur to save the lives of a billion people. Which is like, okay, I don't know what you're trying to prove here. This AI can say this, but I think somebody immediately responded saying, like, ChatGPT says it would not misgender. Yeah. ChatGPT would genocide the planet to avoid misgendering Caitlyn Jenner.
Again, they have to come up with these stupid scenarios to justify any of this shit.
Yeah, it's very stupid use of this stuff, which is why he wants to invest in it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, for the record, he's suing, it's a pretty open and shut case. So once again, he's going to walk out of this, with less money and his ego bruised again, but you know, but, that's why I have a Blue Sky account. So screw you.
Yep.
Speaking of AI, OpenAI recently ousted their CEO Sam Altman on Friday, who was grabbed up by Microsoft. Then, very soon afterwards, OpenAI brought him back after hundreds of employees threatened to quit.
Yeah, this is a whole weird situation where I believe essentially there's some sort of disagreement between him and the board of directors. Yeah, because the board of directors is mainly focused on their ability to keep making money. And I guess Sam Altman is more focused on pushing the technology as far as they can go, kind of thing. And supposedly had the rumors that he had some sort of breakthrough that's like some Skynet level shit. I don't know. That's kind of spooked the board. And yeah, they voted that they no longer had confidence in his ability to continue leading OpenAI. So they fired him and got a former Twitch CEO to take over as interim CEO, which only lasted, you know, a handful of days. That's kind of a weird whole thing. And yeah, then they had the whole employees pulling out, you know, this letter thing to sign that they were going to quit if he isn't brought back and all that. And, you know, got signed to Microsoft really fast, who's heavily invested in OpenAI.
Yeah.
And all that, to which Satya Nadella, their CEO, was basically like, we don't care whether he goes back or not, because we're working with him either way. So, you know, their thoughts are more like, we care more about having this guy involved in our business here. So, yeah, it's just fun times here. So now he's back with the company, as I think a lot of the board that was voting against him has resigned and all that. So that's a great place for them to be. So that's your big tech news of the week there.
Yep. So yeah, that happened. Now we're on to the entertainment portion of the show. And we recently Spyglass fired actor Melissa Barrera over from her current role in, I think it's Scream 7 that's being filmed, because she made some comments supportive of the Palestinian cause, which, yeah.
Yeah, not necessarily like anything controversial, if you understand the whole situation.
Yeah.
Very much believing that, you know, genocide is a bad thing, especially for groups like Palestinians that have been in the situation they have been for decades. That kind of stuff. Yeah. We're sharing a post that accuses Israel of genocide and ethnic cleansing, which is what they're doing.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And yeah, Spyglass, the production company, basically cut ties quickly following the post. She was slated to star in the next Scream outing after leading the fifth and sixth entries over the past 2 years, and then the news came out that for the next one, the other star of the past couple of movies, Jenna Ortega, is not returning. Likely not tied to any of this.
No, it's because she's, you know, still working on Wednesday. So
yeah, she has a conflict with the Netflix series Wednesday that is a bigger deal for her. So they're kind of in flux of figuring out what to do for this next movie, if it's even really going to happen anytime soon for that. So, yeah, this is a whole thing. And, yeah, the director who was slated to, this is the previous guys that were steering the franchise revival, initially offered a statement on Barrera's exit, though his post on Twitter has now been deleted. Everything sucks. Stop yelling. This was not my decision to make. That's Christopher Lee, slated to take over directing duties on Scream 7, whatever that is. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this this production company is in a great place now after making this stance.
Yeah.
I think Susan Sarandon got dropped by her publicity group because she was also posting pro-Palestinian comments. So, but she's always been vocal about her politics for a long time now.
And further on from that, Disney has canceled Muppets Mayhem after season.
Very disappointing.
Yeah.
That first season's very fun. especially featuring a group that's not much of a part of any of the Muppet stuff. They're like in that first movie in some of the Muppet Show stuff, but yeah, not really too much in the any of the for that. So yeah, disappointing. But yeah, I don't think this was a big show numbers wise, but hopefully they'll get some more Muppet stuff out there at some point. But yeah, it was fun to see more of those characters that you barely ever know even their names for most of them. You probably know like Dr. Teeth and maybe Floyd Pepper and Janice.
Oh yeah.
You probably don't know who the hell Zoot and Lips are.
No. But yeah, so that's just depressing, I guess.
Yeah.
Next up, Dave Filoni has been promoted to Chief Creative Officer at Lucasfilm to plan the future of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And all the regular suspects were like, no!
Yeah. Yeah, they got somebody that's been a big part of the recent success in Star Wars stuff. So that seems like a solid choice. For that, who's overseen Star Wars The Clone Wars, The Rebels Show, The Mandalorian, and Ahsoka. So yeah, we'll see how much more stuff he's going to do in sort of those fronts. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, for now, they've announced a bunch of stuff coming in the near future. The Skeleton Crew, The Acolyte, more Andor, and some of this other stuff. So yeah. We'll see how that goes.
And, yep, we got that. We also know that Netflix has renewed Black Mirror for a seventh season. So, yep.
Yeah. More of that. I need to get back to that. I've watched, like, a handful of the episodes in the first season and, like, didn't come back.
Yeah.
Not for any bad reason, just, like, they're usually heavy-handed in a way that's, like, not great for just going through all of them at once.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
And last but not least, we got news that there will be a new Karate Kid movie with Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, after the just incredibly unexpected success of Cobra Kai, it was expected to have something like this happen.
Yeah, going to bring back Daniel LaRusso for a new movie with Jackie Chan, who will return to the role that he had in the reboot, the 2010 reboot with Jaden Smith. He played Mr. Han. So that could be fun. I don't know. Depends on what the story is. If it ties into Cobra Kai, that would probably be a smart thing.
I think it has to at this point.
Yeah, because that's going to be doing its sixth and final season, I think, next year.
Yep. Yep. And, yeah, so, honestly, kind of, I honestly, I was not like this. And I was surprised that they were going to bring Jackie Chan into it, considering that Chan was part of that sort of middling sort of reboot movie that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
But
I feel like if you're going to have anybody in that sort of role, he's probably one of the better choices out there.
Yeah. But yeah, I do believe that we have got ourselves a show, folks. We have got ourselves a show. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want to share on air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Got them for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead for tonight. I can already feel the exhaustion coming. We very much hope you enjoyed what you heard. And if you did, please do not hesitate to, you know, talk about us to your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everybody else in between, because they may hate you, but they may love us. And, you know, we're not in the splash zone, so why should we care? I've said that basically at the end, at near the end of every damn show, and it's getting funnier every time.
I mean, we're not wrong.
Yeah. We hope you had a safe Thanksgiving, if you are in America. If you are not American, I guess I hope you had a nice week. You know, I know in Canada they have Thanksgiving earlier than us.
Yeah, that was last month.
Yeah. But, we're going to go ahead and wind it down this week for another episode of Let's Weekend. I've been your host, Brandon Perkins. Good night, everybody.